Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and we're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. Based on some of the comments on some of the last videos, maybe it's not for car people at all. We're just all sorts of wrong on stuff.
Wait, did we get big corrections?
I did. It was a comment I said about the Aston Martin V12, like the Vanquish and DB9, basically being two Duratecs, like, welded together. Which it isn't, it's a joke.
I feel like that's excusable because it is a joke. Like, nobody is saying that it's funny.
Well, but it's not, because it kind of is. They use all the architecture from the Duratec motor, and Cosworth massages it and uses some different internals and stuff. But it's still two Duratecs.
They didn't just
take them out of a Ford and just go...
They just put them in Photoshop, essentially, copied and mirrored, and then boink, and did all the engineering bits to make that work.
Engineering bits.
They just made it work. That's my favorite thing is just. You can just hand wave away. So much complication.
If you enjoy this podcast, regardless of how right or wrong we are, help us out with the algorithms. Leave a 5-star review based on our sense of humor, not our wonderful advice. This is not an advice podcast. This is, well, maybe educate, entertain, and edify.
So. I just don't think you should take us too seriously.
Correct.
We don't take ourselves seriously.
Correct. Listen to the disclaimer at the end. I shouldn't give it at the beginning. Anyway, please like, subscribe, share, review. It all helps us out with your algorithms. Let's start with a warm-up lap, of course, for our audio listeners only. I start out with a visual cue for the audio listeners only. We got a nice gift from one of our listeners, Ed K, where he engraved a quote from a previous podcast. One of my favorite quotes of all time that isn't my quote, but he has my name on it. So I feel like Michael Scott quoting Wayne Gretzky quote.
That's sweet.
Yeah. If you're only into cars as an investment or display of financial success, you're not really into cars. You're into money. Still don't know who to credit for that quote.
It's so good, though.
But anyway.
Mic drop. Except don't. Ethan will get very upset if we drop these mics.
We can simulate a mic drop.
He's going to hate editing this.
Why edit it? This is gold. This is all gold. We have a 996 GT3 update for Tyler.
Ooh.
Tyler has been searching for one for a long time. Not silver, not black, right?
Yeah, not
ideally.
Not guards red.
Not guards red. Yeah, so that eliminates 75% of them. I sold a yellow one a number of years back.
I like yellow.
That had some track use and had a bad gearbox, which I then memorialized by taking the bad parts of the gearbox and the missing teeth and made it into a lamp.
Oh, have I seen this lamp?
Yes, it's in my
garage.
I didn't
know that was a 996 GT3 lamp.
Yes, it's a yellow one. So I thought, well, that car might be in Tyler's budget. So I emailed him this week to see if he was interested in selling. And he said, well, I wrecked the car on the track about 5 years ago.
Nice.
Yep. Totaled it. Completely gone. So that
now
was out.
75.5% of all 996 GT3s are out of the running.
Yes. Yes. I did email on a midnight blue one we sold, though, with like 95,000 miles.
Did you get a response on a midnight blue one?
I mean, I know the guy I sold it to, so we'll see. I actually called him. Let's see. Speaking of GT3s, mint green, the infamous mint green GT3 with a failed wide body kit that was removed and it's jumped from dealer to dealer. It's the hot potato of all hot potatoes.
I'll just buy this one.
It's
not a 996, but it's green.
Yeah, it's 2018. We have a big update on that one coming next week. I'm flying out to Boston this week and we're going to get some content and some updates. And I'm very excited about this. So, on to our main topic. Speeding in Washington State may soon be impossible, at least according to this article by Car and Driver.
Yes, a bill currently before the Washington State House Transportation Committee is aimed at physically curbing speed for drivers who have a history of excessive speed. House Bill 1596 is intended to be named for a mother and two children who were killed by a speeding driver running a red light in Renton, Washington. If passed, the new law will require intelligent speed limiters to be fitted to vehicles driven by anyone with a past history of excessive speed. In Washington State, excessive speed is defined as 20 miles an hour over the posted limit.
Sounds like Virginia.
Yeah, I was gonna. That's kind of nuts. Hopefully, cannonballers don't live in Washington.
You stole my line.
Oh, really?
Well, cannonballers don't go through there, and that's an important.
That's true. The article goes on into some more details that we'll discuss as well, but intelligent speed limiters are mandatory on new vehicles registered in the EU as of July of 2024. Also last year, California's Senate passed a bill which aimed to mandate speed warning systems on most new vehicles in California. However, Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed the bill, which I find interesting. That seems very out of character, and I'm sure there's a reason. I'm glad he did, but... it's kind of interesting.
Maybe he's a habitual speeder.
He's like, I want to go fast.
Although I think he thinks he is above the law, so any law he passed wouldn't matter anyway. Rules for thee, not for me, seems to be his kind of thing.
So these intelligent speed limiters, which I thought that was kind of okay, what makes it intelligent? It's like saying a smartphone. Okay, what makes it smart? So these are apparently tied to GPS in order to read the speed limit of the part of the road a vehicle is traveling on. So my guess is this is similar to the little mile an hour readout you get in your Maps app of choice.
But it's not GPS, though. They use cameras to actually read the signs. Because they highlighted a potential issue with these down below is that they can read them inerrantly. And there was a commenter in one of our videos recently that said they were driving one of their cars and they were on a main road and accidentally read a side road speed limit 10 miles an hour. And it like slammed on the brakes.
That's so dangerous.
I know. I thought about getting a white delivery van with all these new cameras and stuff because like, Aaron's Mazda has a system. A lot of the new cars have it to just tell you the speed limit. Some of them actually react to it if you have the laser cruise control going. And just getting a white van and then painting on the back of it, like speed limit 100.
Oh.
And just driving all over.
This is a... Yeah, I just... This... it feels like we're using, like we typically do, technology to... incorrectly, I think, to solve a problem.
Okay, but in this case, right, it's for habitual speeders. It's the bill that Washington State is proposing is akin more to the breathalyzer interlocks, according to this article, that are fitted to vehicles of people who have had multiple convictions of drunk driving. So this would be a reactive thing. So it'd be, habitual speeders, repeat offenders, people with multiple convictions. So it'd be a mandatory fitting of the device to those people's cars. So they're not saying, oh, this is like a big brother nanny state. This is just the people who are a menace to society based on their driving history. Now, I wish they could fit some sort of device, like instead of speeding, right? Like you could have somebody with 8 speeding convictions and 0 accidents and 1 million safe miles. What if you had a person like Nissan Altimas, right? 5 accidents per driver. Can you like fit a like AI driving instructor to the car and make them better drivers? Like they're a real menace to society.
I agree. And it's people on their phones and going left to center and like all of this other stuff, not to discount the incident that, has been the recipient of kind of a lot of the reasoning for this bill. But it's like there are usually other reasons that speed contributes to, as we've discussed, causing things to go awry and to cause accidents. But
I'm so glad you brought that up because I actually brought up some traffic data from the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, because, they're comparing this bill and this device to DUI people, right? So we all say like, okay, yeah, that's reasonable for somebody who's had a bunch of DUI convictions to have a breathalyzer interlock system so they can't drive without proving that they're not drunk. And I would go so far as to say that that is actually, it's really too little too late. It's how I feel that most of our government security, TSA, all sorts of things like that, the laws that we pass, they're all reactive, right? So DUIs are a problem, right? DUI, drunk driving, was responsible for 13,500. I got to find the stat again. I believe it was 13,500 deaths in 2022 in America. All right. So this is a big problem. But the breathalyzer interlock or the party plates in Ohio, which just served to shame somebody, right?
I do like the party plates because it's like, we're just going to shame you and make sure the cops got a bead on you all the time.
Right. But it's like you have to have like 3, 4, 5 convictions already. How many of us know somebody who's either wrecked a car or somebody who's gotten killed by a drunk driver who had 1, 2, 3 pending charges against them already for drunk driving? It shouldn't be a 3rd, 4th, 5th conviction. It should be a 2-strike policy. You do it once, you go to jail, you lose your license for a long time, you go to remediation school, whatever. You do it again, like, you're done. You can never drive a car again. Like, that shouldn't, this shouldn't be a thing that we're letting people do 4, 5, 6 times. So if they're going to do this speed limit thing, if they truly believe in it, right? If they think that speeders are as dangerous as drunk drivers, which I don't, but let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, then this bill is also too little too late. It's not enough. If they think this is as big a problem as DUI, then it should be severe, swift, strict penalties, not, oh, you get a device that limits your speed after 5 times you've been convicted already. It's too late.
Well, I like too that it says something about, yeah, vehicles would be incapable of exceeding the speed limit without specific driver overrides. And it says only 3 overrides would be permitted per month. So it's like not even, it's all just very nebulous, working on the symptom of and not the actual problem, I think.
Yes. And the statistics I pulled up indicated that, and I may be off by 1,000 total, but it was either 14.5 and 13.5 or 13.5 and 12.5. I believe it's 13.5 and 12.5. Drunk driving was responsible for 13,500 deaths approximately in North America, or sorry, in the U.S. in 2022. That's out of about a total of 42,500. So a reasonable percentage. Now, speeding is less dangerous, according to the NHTSA, because 12,500 deaths were speeding related. So, contrary to what we've heard, that speed is responsible for a majority of traffic deaths. We've all heard that stat before. No, it's less than 25%. But speeding related is a whole lot of things. If you go through a red light at any speed, that is a speeding related accident, because guess what the speed limit is when you're at a red light?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
Which, hold on, let's back it up. This is also what annoys me about this law even happening. It said in the article, the law is named after someone or in honor of someone who was killed by a speeder, quote unquote, who was running a red light. Speed wasn't the issue. They ran a freaking red light.
Yeah, that's an entirely different problem that's not related to how fast they're going. Because any speed through a red light into an intersection is very dangerous. Like,
yes.
Very, very dangerous.
Yes. Yeah. I don't want to downplay the grief of this family, but it annoys me. And we covered, probably a couple years ago, a case and a law that was passed in New York, kind of the same deal, where they blamed it on the driver speeding. And the kid had like run out into the street after a soccer ball. And I'm like, some parents, instead of blaming their lack of parenting or just saying, well, this stuff happens, go, let's, you know, go after the congressman and let's bug them and let's get this law passed, because that'll be justice. That'll make us feel better. And it's not, in this case, I don't believe this is really justice, because they're not even going after the right thing. It's a speeding related accident causing a death that that's not the primary cause. The person ran a dang red light, and how much you want to bet they were drinking?
And they could be drinking. They could have been on their phone. Like, we can guess at exactly what was going on, but there's so many things that lead that to be the problem.
How many sober people do you know that run red lights on the regs?
I mean, not many. At least they don't admit to it, I guess.
It's not a laughing matter, but it is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. So, yeah. I don't agree with this. I don't think this will solve anything. If it was a problem, it's too little too late. It's not a problem. I don't believe speeding is as dangerous as people say it is. If it's speed-related deaths are 12,500 out of 42,500 a year, and a good friend of mine who's an accident investigator in California did an article, I believe also with – no, that was with Road and Track. And he said – that the speed related thing is total crap because not to get too political, but it's kind of how COVID related deaths were reported back in the day, because, you know, there was a financial incentive for hospitals reporting COVID related deaths. And so people would die of this and this. And it's kind of the same way as how they report accidents. They'll have multiple causes of the accident that they can put down. So speeding could be a fourth one. Well, that's speed related. So if you think about it that way, the number is actually really, really small. If you could break it down and say, well, which ones were speeding only the primary cause? Probably very few.
Yeah, and I would wonder how you'd even determine that, because there's still other things. Like, if you're cutting up the highway traffic and making a bunch of erratic movements in groups of people, that is most likely what caused the accident, I guess, in my opinion, uneducated opinion about these things. But, like, if you're cutting up traffic, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Driving erratic and making sudden movements that people need to respond to unexpectedly is what causes most accidents, from some things that I have read that I don't have a source for.
Right. But that's like, just straight up reckless driving.
Yeah.
That is choosing to be a complete moron. Yeah. Speaking of DUIs, though, Marcus Jordan was arrested on charges of DUI down in Florida, outside of Orlando, when he drove his Lamborghini Urus down the train tracks. There is body cam footage of this, and he tried to make all sorts of excuses, like, I'm lost, I'm not from here, I thought I was turning onto the highway. In Cleveland, that might have held true because the highways are so bad. Yeah. You might not be able to tell.
Feels like you're driving on train tracks.
Yeah. But in Florida, they're pretty decent. So, to which the cop responded, he's like, do you realize how far down the train tracks you drove? This was not a wrong turn. Like, I don't even know how we're going to haul you out of here. I think we need a crane, basically. He did try to pull the I'm Michael Jordan's son card.
Oh, which is just, that's gross. Hate it.
Yeah. So one more Urus bites the dust.
Anyway, I've seen some photos of a pretty hot Corvette that you sent me, Doug.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's this, like, burgundy maroon color. So good looking.
Yeah. C7 Z06 convertible.
So good.
This guy's definitely a shrewd negotiator. It's listed on Facebook. 2016 Z06 convertible with 19,000 miles, automatic, and he wants $87,500 for this sucker.
Wow.
Yes.
What's a normal price for a convertible Z06?
Well, I looked up two almost identical comps. One was 3 years newer with the same mileage, and it sold for $74,500 on Bring a Trailer.
Okay.
And then a Callaway version with ceramic brakes, the SC757, sold for $84,000. But that's a big premium for all those upgrades, probably $50,000+ in upgrades.
Callaway bits.
But the reason this guy thinks his car is worth so much, and these comps were direct comps with the same equipment, same color combo, but this guy's car is rare. Long Beach Red, Spice Red Package, very limited quantity produced, adult driven, loaded just the way it came from GM. Serious buyers only, no trades.
What? So people like to say adult driven, but I think technically an 18-year-old is an adult, right?
Yes.
So, like, what does that mean? Oh, that's ridiculous.
I think they're all adults driving them. I mean, well, I know a few 16-year-olds with trust funds that might have a Corvette.
Might have a Corvette, but
yeah, that is a ridiculous statement.
It's just so just the way it came from GM.
So, not surprisingly, he got OP Finna got dragged in the comments big time for being on crack. All the usual stuff. We love the Corvette for sale pages on Facebook, and people were just ripping him a new one, and that set him off. So we're gonna bring out the Corvette curmudgeon, because this guy epitomized the Corvette curmudgeon, and I'm gonna read his response word for word.
It's so ominous.
This is actually the seller of this car. OMG, what a bunch of panty wearing boys. Sorry, y'all feel Corvettes shouldn't hold their value. Men are proud to be a Corvette owners and maintain their values as high as possible. This is a one of 82 out of over 40,000 made this year. Rarity is what helps a Corvette hold value. Sorry you boys didn't have foresight when you purchased yours. I know I'm giving you credit where credit probably isn't due. The owner of this masterpiece.
I forget how many Corvettes they make every year, which I love. Like, keep pumping them out. They're great. They're fantastic. But, like, 40,000?
He's self-owned right there. One of 82 out of over 40,000.
I'm used to talking about cars. I'm used to talking about cars where there's, like, a few thousand made, if that, which is, like, whew.
I just love that he capitalized owner. Like, it's a proper noun title. The owner.
Of this masterpiece. Comma. And all the boys were spelled with a Z instead of an S, which I don't get. He's like a high schooler from 2008. Oh,
it is a beautiful amazing car, though.
So good looking.
So good.
So good. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
It would not be a podcast without somebody doing something illegal or a scam happening. And in this segment, we have an undercover sting operation, sort of, at a car dealership.
That's right. Sounds sick.
Oh, yeah. C&D Motorsports in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which at the moment actually has a 4.6 out of 5-star rating. So,
well, that would pass the sniff test then. Usually it's below like 4.2, 4.5, where
yeah, that's hotels and car dealers, man. Below 4.2, like, you might get bed bugs. So let's see. We've got Department of Justice press release here, and we had a couple people send us the case text from the actual case documents and stuff, which, as a non-lawyer, it was heavy reading, but it was interesting. So, two undercover FBI agents, right? IRS. I don't know what the IRS has to do with money laundering. That's it. Drug stuff. I was thinking drug stuff, but yes, I'm getting there.
Lady and gents.
There's so many. There's more acronyms in the government than there is in Porsche 996s, right? You got the FBI, the IMS, the AOS, the IRS.
Look, I don't want the IMS coming after me. And I just got the IRS replaced in my 996. Whew. Dodged a bullet.
Have you ever had an AOS audit, though?
Oh, buddy. Let me tell you. The camera will be off before we talk about that.
All right. So there was a trial last year, but in 2022, a grand jury invited them to court. They indicted the owner of the dealership, Michael Torres, and an employee, Christopher Lopez, both from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I'm sorry, I had that reversed. Lopez is the owner, Torres is the employee. So agents with the Internal Revenue Service began investigating C&D Motorsports in 2019 after receiving reports that this dealership catered to known drug traffickers who were known to have purchased vehicles from this dealership. So, lest car dealers fear that IRS agents are just going to come in undercover and just, like, you know, start asking them or trying to trip them up or get them to commit a crime, there was already some suspicion here that uncouth activities were happening. So the undercover agents met with Torres and Lopez at the dealership on October 16th, and they discussed purchasing a vehicle using cash, and they clearly stated, one, that the vehicle, the dollars were proceeds from cocaine trafficking. And it's like, that
it's like the Hey There Fellow Kids meme. It's like, I'm going to use this money that I got from cocaine. How does that make you feel? Got anything to say about that? Got any problems with that?
I was watching some other video of these two undercover cops going into a drugstore, not drugstore, but like a vape store or whatever. Yeah. I don't know what they are. I don't go into them, so I don't know what they're called. Soak shop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they were asking for weed or something illegal. And the way that they asked was so obvious. The one guy walked in and asked about it, and the clerk said no. And then the next guy walked in and, like, oh, hey, you're my buddy, like, recognized the other guy. And, like, we're like, hey, and he asked the clerk for the exact same thing. And the clerk immediately was like, so you guys work together? Where's your badges? And they're trying to play it off like, no, man, we're cool, bro.
Oh, my God.
So bad.
I would like one weed, please. Can you?
Yes. Do you have the illegal drugs in back?
Yeah. Like, oh, amazing. So it's like a cartoon.
I'm hoping these IRS agents were a little bit better actors. But if they stated outright, which they did, that the cash was a result proceeds of cocaine traffic, and they didn't want no government forms.
That's what I was looking for. That's in, like, the court, the case text.
I'm right.
Like,
huh. And that the male IRS agent was going to purchase it in his girlfriend's name. The cash was going to come from him, but it was going to be titled to her because he wanted to avoid a paper trail. Like, just throwing out there right in plain sight the illegal things they wanted to do. And the salesman was like, yep, I'm your guy. And if you know any other people that want to do this, refer them to me.
Yeah, it was like anybody else who needs discretion. It's like, ooh, this feels like it's out of a movie. Like,
right. Right. So why does this matter, right? So car dealers and other businesses are required to report any cash transactions in excess of $10,000, Form 8300. So you have to disclose the source of it, what it's for, et cetera, et cetera. We do this every now and then. And interestingly enough as well, the person giving you the cash, like, if it's suspicious at all, or they are essentially, like, trying to avoid the form, you're supposed to fill out the form as well. So if it's suspicious in any other manner, you're supposed to do that. So I remember way back when I worked at a Land Rover dealer, and a family was buying a used Mercedes, I think, and they had some restaurants, and Chinese restaurants, and they, like, put a really low income on their credit app and then said they couldn't get approved because their debt-to-income ratio was insane. It was like 100%. And they're like, well, that's not a real income. We make $250,000, but we don't report it to the IRS. Like, just basically laying it out
nice.
There. So even though they weren't trying to pay cash over a certain amount, my sales manager said, listen, you have to report this because we know that they're trying to avoid reporting, so we have to report it anyway. Now, there's a weird little gray area where I'm like, okay, at what point, right? Like, we inform people, this is the rule. We file Form 8300 for cash transactions over 10 grand. right? Because that's the law. We have to do that, and we have to give them a copy of that form saying that we submitted it to the IRS. But some people would say, well, that's like helping them avoid it because you're telling them what you have to report.
Mm.
And I'm not saying, oh, well, give us $9,900 and we won't. It's just like, this is the rule. This is a publicly known rule, like $10,000. That's the threshold. So I don't know. Yeah. But if somebody says that this is cocaine money, I wouldn't say I'm filing a form. I just feel like there's a door.
Wouldn't you also laugh if somebody explicitly said, like, I'm paying you in cocaine money? I got this from selling the weed to some kids on the corner. Like, what? Gosh.
Yeah. So they got themselves arrested. And their defense attorney tried a number of things, including trying to say, like, well, they didn't really know what was going on. They weren't complicit in this. And this was entrapment. None of these things held up because in the audio and video recording that the IRS had, it was patently obvious that the dealership was totally game for this, wanted more of it, and was happy to help them completely avoid any sort of reporting to the government and, you know, participate in this illicit activity.
Just got to avoid them government forms, bro.
Yep. Yep. So the jury found Lopez and Torres guilty of conspiracy to commit money laundering, unanimously finding them to have conspired to conceal or disguise the nature, source, ownership, or control of property believed to be proceeds of cocaine distribution. They were just sentenced just a couple weeks ago, and the owner received 1 year and 1 day in prison, and the salesman got 6 months imprisoned. Both defendants were ordered to serve 1 year on supervised release following completion of their prison terms. Of course, car dealers are so highly unregulated that, they won't be able to get a dealer license after this, but I'm pretty sure they could just go right to a dealership and get hired the next day, at least as salespeople or general managers or something.
Whew.
Makes me think of our old friend Charles Harris, who had a fraud case back in 2012. He was sentenced to prison time for defrauding banks. And because he was a convicted felon, he couldn't get a dealer license in the state of Tennessee. So he just got one in his dad's name.
Nice.
And just did all the transactions, which, I don't know, I guess you could say all of the transactions were illegal because he wasn't an authorized signer for anything. But anyway, we'll have an update on him soon, too.
Ooh, but so many teasers. In the next episode.
Coming
up next week.
So I don't know what the lesson is here. There is one lesson. We talked about, like, debt in the car business, right? Or debt in general.
Yes.
How not to be a scammer episode, right? Don't put yourselves in positions where you need to take certain types of deals in order to make the payments, right?
For
Don't
sure.
leverage yep, yep. yourself to a point where you're desperate. Now, this might have just been greed. They may have been like, they just like doing illegal things, and this was their thing, is helping out drug dealers get cars. But let's say you're the one-off dealer that likes to do good things most of the time, but you got a massive floor plan and house payments and all sorts of stuff placed in the Caymans and the basketball season tickets, you know, Bob Serpentini, alligator shoes. And you have somebody that comes in and just, it's the deal's a little bit off. They want you to do just little bit shady things.
Yeah.
If you don't have a payment in the world, if you don't owe anybody, it's really that much easier to just say, nah, there's the door.
I don't need that
kind of trouble.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think this maybe was their niche in the business, though. Let's do the all-time favorite license plates.
Oh, love the license plates.
Vanity license plates. This game is brought to us by Alan Hoover of Solon Spine in, of course, Solon, Ohio. If you have back problems and are considering surgery and or injections, talk to Alan Hoover before you do that. That's Solon Spine in Solon, Ohio. Might be solonspine.com, but I'm not sure. This is not official ad copy, but please tell him when he's fixing your back that you heard about him on Switchcast. So the game is we have a vanity plate and we have to see how good we are at stereotypes by guessing the car that this comes from.
I feel like it any week now you're just going to get really mean to me because I've not been kind to you. I will admit
I might just suck at this game. It's very possible. You first this time.
Ooh, okay. This comes from a friend of the show, Josh. He sent love all of the texts I get from Josh. Century with a 3 instead of an E.
Corvette C3.
No.
Toyota Century.
Ooh.
Buick Century.
There we go. Ding, yeah! Ding, ding, ding.
I was going for the cool stuff first.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
What are you saying? Corvette Buick C3 Centuries cool. are not cool with their sofas for seats? I drove one of those for like 5 years?
They're coming back.
The ones that are still alive and didn't rust into nothing. Anyway, what do you got for me?
Okay, I've got one. It is P-P-L-E-P-E. No. Pepe Le Pew.
This is a black car with white racing stripes. And it, no? Well, like a skunk.
No, just go. Just keep going.
It is.
Glance at my photo.
No. Oh, God. That's going to be Mustang.
Nope. It's a blue car with a stripe.
Okay.
Corvette Grand Sport.
Really?
Corvette C4, right?
I mean,
Corvette's a French word.
But Pepe, interesting. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I always love that plate. I've had that in my archives for years and years and
years. Years. Oh, we whipped
Pepe
them out.
Le Pew.
All right, the next one is no. Also from Josh.
I don't even know where to start. It could be anything.
It could be.
How many O's?
6. It's the maximum plate size in Ohio.
Oh. It's got to be a minivan or like a giant SUV. And they're like, no, because they have too many kids. They don't want any more.
I'm upset at how close you are. That
it's
is
like a GMC Suburban or something.
So close. Kia Telluride. Yeah. In the right vein.
The Korean
you got
version.
It. Yep.
The Korean
you got
Suburban.
It.
All right. 2.4 GPA.
What? Oh, this is a flex. This is like the dropout plates. This is like the dropout plates. Challenger, like Demon.
No. No.
No.
No.
No.
Paint to sample Porsche 991 GT3 RS.
Really?
Big flex.
They went like, woo.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. I have, this comes from Martin Meir on Instagram, Tiger King.
I feel like that's
spelled
a Buick also.
That would fit the vibe. It is not, but that would fit the vibe.
All right, what is it?
That is a Ford F-250 Super Duty.
All right.
Big old white truck.
Yeah, okay. Here's one for you. Torque, but the E is a 3. I don't think that is relevant. I think it's just torque.
Torque.
Because otherwise it'd be torque U3.
Is that an AMG Mercedes?
No. More torque.
More torque? Like a semi truck?
No. More torque.
More torque.
Well,
what has more? Okay, what is it?
Tesla. Oh. Come on, electric motor, all the torque in the world. That is the only EV plate I've ever seen that gets a pass in my book. All the LOL gas, no gas, I'm green, all those plates, stupid. They should be banned for being offensive because they're not cool.
Yeah, no, it's...
I'll give you the torque one.
Yeah, the torque is funny. I like that. This is Truck Girl, T-R-U-K-G-R-L.
Chevy Cobalt, her boyfriend, has a truck.
No, actually, it's not.
Okay, it's an American truck, 100%. Chevy product. No?
It's a Dodge Ram, and it's lifted with
You mean
big
a Ram?
Old, big old, Well, yeah, I get. I think it's old enough that it's still technically a Dodge Ram.
Of course it's lifted.
Ram.
We know it's lifted. Does it have pink things on it?
I don't actually know.
Like the pink surrounding the logo and like airbrush stuff. And
this was only of the like the plate, so maybe it does elsewhere.
Okay, here's an easy one for you. N balance.
Oh, Corvette.
Yes!
New Balance.
Yep.
I was going to be so embarrassed if I missed that. All right, last one for me. Three great, spelled with an eight, kids, KDS. From also
their
from
teachers might beg to differ. Another Kia Telluride?
No, it is not. You can fit more than three kids in a Telluride.
That could be anything.
Volvo S60.
Oh, look at you flexing that somebody can have a cool Volvo and still have kids.
They
Mr.
can.
Volvo over here. All right, I'm going to change it up a little bit for you here. I'm going to read some history of a vehicle off of Carfax, and then you got to guess the car based on the stereotype, and then I'll tell you the plate. Okay. Let's see. We've got all sorts of service here, service. Accident reported, vehicle involved in a rear-end collision. Vehicle overturned.
What?
Functional damage reported. Airbags did not deploy.
And it turned over?
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's see. Front door latch replaced. Tailgate trunk lock replaced.
Probably from the, you know.
No, these are later on. Let's see. Front door latch replaced again.
Oh, my God. Is this being been like broken into a bunch?
Maybe. Whoa. Another accident reported. Okay. It hit a curb.
Less severe than the first one.
That's it. Vehicle repossessed.
Nice.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Is this a Nissan Altima?
It is. It is a Nissan Altima. And would you like to know the plate?
What is the plate?
Self-made. Should be more like self-owned. I don't know. It just speaks for itself. Vehicle repossessed, self-made. That is the opposite of the 2.4 GPA Porsche Flex.
Yeah, it's like, bro, why are you flexing? Bro,
this episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast.
Big news this month. De Tomaso has completed their first P72 supercar.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
But it's still not a customer delivery. It is their first production car, VIN number 001, but they have not delivered a customer car yet. Now, why does this matter? Well, we did a podcast, oh man, maybe a year and a half ago, thanks to a wonderful article from SSO Report that detailed the struggles that De Tomaso had in their restart after being purchased out of bankruptcy in 2015 or at auction. Make sure I get my details right, and if I don't know, say maybe.
this is not this. Advice. We don't act to be factual.
Yeah, right. They purchased the rights to the company for like $1 million and decided to restart the company. And the P72 was their first prototype, which was not was, is the most beautiful supercar on the market. Well, on the market's an interesting
big
term.
Old air quotes on
out
that.
There, in my opinion. I think this is just incredible. They had initially announced that it was going to base at around 750,000 euro, which was a little bit short. They doubled their price somewhere along the way because yes. It was estimated that the parts run just for one vehicle was 650,000. So there's no way
nice.
You can make that work. I think it's 1,900 production hours for this car.
Whoa.
So yeah, that math wasn't going to math, but I think it got them a lot of deposits, which...
Well, I think the deposits disappeared like instantaneously. When it showed up at Goodwood, I think people were just like stumbling over each other to give them 100K out as a deposit.
Yeah, disappeared is an unfortunate choice of terms. You're implying that they went missing.
That's not...
According to the company, they held them in escrow. But, you know, this is a startup. We talked about the Radford Motors bankruptcy. That, you know, startups... you might as well light your money on fire when you're investing in an automotive startup. I'm sorry, when you place a deposit for an yeah, automotive there. Startup, you're not investing in their company. No. Anyway, I found it interesting because I really want this car to come to fruition. I'd like for it to be cheaper so I could afford one, but you know, whatever. I can't. So I read an article in January that said the De Tomaso P72 is coming this year. That was January of 2023, right?
Oh, nice.
Yep. So it talked about how they had reached a new deal with a company. They had some troubles with their previous company, you know, Capricorn, and the company that made the Apollo Intenzio Emotion. The IE company, they had actually produced three of the Apollos, but apparently they weren't street legal. They were basically garage art, according to the people that bought them. So they did deliver three of those cars, but that's not enough to make any money. So they used some of the design and stuff like that for the P72 from the remains of that company, as best I understand it. And... struck a deal with an outside company to produce the De Tomaso P72 because there's only four employees at the time, according to what I read, and none of them were like car people, engineers or anything like that. They were marketing people and business people. So it was basically an outsourced production. They claimed nice. All of them were pre-sold, but they've been to a lot of events marketing these cars. They've repainted the original prototype numerous times, kind of a Nissan R390 GT1 move where there's two, there's one.
That is true, but I don't know if we need to set the R390, and at least the R390 existed.
Nissan didn't need to sell any R390s. They just needed to produce one for homologation purposes. The P72, they actually need to sell them.
I wish they did sell R390s, though. Those are so good looking.
Yes, they are good.
It is so good looking. The race cars are really good.
Anyway, so March 2023, the work on the P72 stopped because the company that they had outsourced to, Capricorn, wanted their money and they weren't getting paid. So it appears that they had a new deal with the company HWA to produce it. And there's another article in January of 2024 that says the De Tomaso P72 is coming later this year. So it's kind of like an anniversary thing, right?
It's just Groundhog Day.
Yeah. To finally enter production in the second half of 2024. Well, they did start production, and they made a bunch of noise about it on their website, indicating, well, maybe I read that wrong. I shouldn't accuse them of something. I read it as this is a customer car. So it is a production spec car. It is VIN number 001, but it's still essentially a testing prototype, right? McLaren did the XP1 through 5. Were they completed production cars? Yes, absolutely. But they were also their experimental cars. So that is what they have completed. And that brings us to the latest article. I've got so many up here. I got to find this
links
one.
Links on links on links on links.
Yeah. from December of 2024, but we'll say it's January because we're celebrating the anniversary of announcing that the P-72 is coming this year. They should rename it the D. Tomaso Imminent Production. The long road to the first customer cars being delivered is almost over, as D. Tomaso on Tuesday confirmed the production of the first production specification P-72. It'll be used for some final dynamic validation before production of the first customer cars commences. This article is from MotorAuthority.com. Which, when do you think that might be, the first customer cars?
You know, I think you and I will be sitting here in February of 2026, and maybe the first one will come out.
Well, they said likely sometime next year, which that was December of last year. So once again, it's coming this year.
So soon, guys, we promise.
De Tomaso is still working with HWA on the project, so we've got sort of track record with them. HWA is a German motorsports and engineering business with close ties to Mercedes-Benz. It was founded in 98 by AMG co-founder Hans Werner Alfricht. And yeah, they helped De Tomaso, well, Apollo with its Intensa Emozione. So now, according to what I read, De Tomaso said that these delays were so they could, you know, essentially perfect the car. These are, they spun it in a way like this is all planned and this is all for the better. We've identified, you know, engineering issues, safety concerns, things that we wanted to make better. And now it is the best car possible, which I really, really want to believe. Well, I go for it.
As we are poking at fun a bit at the it's coming, this does feel different than when we have talked about, like, Celine, for example. You know, they're like, hey guys, here's all this cool stuff, and it's all like renderings, like nothing actually exists from what
they're
can tell.
Even cool renderings.
Yeah, it's just average.
They're very dated,
but this is something that I think you and I have seen in person at some point, one of the prototypes.
Yes. And we've, like, seen three different ones in three different colors.
Is it the
not
same
all
one
in the same place?
But, like, this is something that neither of us can afford, but we think is so beautiful and is such a juxtaposition with all of the very angular, like, crazy futuristic designs. Like, this is a beautiful
and hybrid
car.
Supercars. This is a Roush developed 5-liter V8 with a manual transmission.
Like, oh, I want it to exist so bad, even though I'll never buy it and probably maybe never see one again. But, like, I just would like for it to be here. Like, it's so weird that this is like a startup that doesn't actually make cars. They outsource it to be a marketing brand. Like, that feels gross.
That might be the best plan ever. Because trying to get your own manufacturing facility and engineering firm and everything, that is probably actually brilliant as long as they can run the business. Now, the past suggests that they may be struggling in how they run their business, whether maybe they didn't have enough startup cash or didn't plan for the delays accordingly. But it's probably going to save them a lot of money as long as they can complete the cars and produce the cars and bring them to delivery. And they did say here that the previous plan was to use an existing carbon tub from Apollo, but HWA developed a new one, which improved the safety, ergonomics, lower center of gravity, increased head and leg room, improved crash safety, and less mass. But that is all coming from De Tomaso. So the things that aren't coming from De Tomaso are cars.
Yes. They got a lot of pretty photos on their website that, I can register my interest. How do I do this?
Which is, how do you register your interest if they were all pre-sold?
Well, that's what's, it doesn't say pre-order or whatever else. It just says register your interest, and it wants all of this info. Which De Tomaso variant are you interested in?
Well, but they want to keep it exclusive. Like, you can't actually buy one, but, you know, I kind of want to register my interest and then just say, I'll give you half price.
They ask, what automotive events do you attend/participate in on the interest thing?
Well, they want to make sure that your car is going to be out there.
What vehicles do you currently have in your collection on a single line entry on the on this forum? Which is your preferred?
The Ford Excursion
first.
Like, I thought about doing a satirical application for the Mustang GTD. Maybe I could do one for the De Tomaso P-72.
They ask your preferred dealer partner, which there's four.
Me.
Ship it right here, guys. You can send a little message, too.
I'll be a Di Tommaso franchise. Don't make me pay up front for for the accoutrement that I need. That's $2 million. You got to redo your showroom. It's $1 million franchise fee. Nah, no thanks. The old Spiker move. That was crazy. Spiker was going to build a new car, right? So they did the C8, and that was a fantastic car. And then they kind of went quiet for a while, and then they said, oh, we're going to bring out a new car, and got all these dealers to sign up as franchise, got a ton of money and deposits and stuff. I don't know how much money they got from the dealers, but then they just went completely belly up. CEO disappeared. Like, it was it's why we pay such close attention to what's going on with Di Tommaso, because any of these companies could go belly up at any point in time, and most of them do. It's not anything we want to see. I'm not wishing any ill will on Di Tommaso. There's just a lot of smoke surrounding their startup. They've had a rocky journey. Really, really hope this thing makes it to the streets.
Me too, because I'd love to see it and hear it driving around. What you should do, though, Doug, is buy one of the Guaras. The last Di Tommaso ever, and then put that in there as the car. They can't. There's got to be what, like, two people that own these. You're going to be at the top of the list.
I almost have twice, actually.
Really?
I've come close to buying two separate Di Tommaso Guaras.
Is Guara the right way to pronounce that?
I think so.
Being an ignorant American,
I keep thinking it's guava. Like, you know, the
guava's good too. This thing is so cool looking.
It's a little short. It's a little short. The proportions are weird.
It's stubby.
I'd like a Guara Spider, Barchetta, whatever they call it, with the windshield, not the one without the windshield. I want some proper, like an actual top that works, you know, practical.
Reminds me of the Lotus Elan, like the last one of those.
Yeah. Well, that was front wheel drive, though. At least the Guara was rear wheel drive. And
this thing is sick.
BMW or Ford drivetrain. Oh, well.
There's been some complications in the past. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars. And probably not your future Di Tommaso franchise.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast. Yeah, there it is, for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com, or you can come by our beautiful showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Check out the hot inventory. Doug, what is the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, 2006 Lamborghini Gallardo SE. That stands for Special Edition, which means it's got branding package and some stitching and badges, and it says it's number something of something. And
nice.
You know, all the options you could get on a regular one, but they just come standard. But it's rare. It's a special edition. Yeah. So bragging rights. Anyway, 16,000 miles, Verde Ithaca, awesome color, rear wheel drive converted, which was actually a surprise to us.
Did you?
We thought we bought an all wheel drive car.
You're like, huh,
where's that drive shaft? Which, honestly, like, people are concerned about it from resale, right? Stock sells. Oh my gosh, I can't sell. It's rear wheel drive. Way better car. Way better car. Lamborghini even admitted that, because they made rear wheel drive versions later on in production. And it was the Valentino Balboni edition, right? He's the Lamborghini factory test driver. What would he prefer? Rear wheel drive. The all wheel drive's heavy. It understeers. Get rid of all that weight in the front. Lighter steering. Better handling. You know, I think it's better, but you know, people just, oh, it's got to be stock. The next guy cares. But, yeah.
And it's green.
It is green. And it's e-gear, which isn't my favorite, but it's, you know, it's good for some people.
Yes.
Tyler, what's our flop of the week?
Let's go. This comes to us from CarBuzz. Every stop sign is now a chance for Jeep to put an ad in your face. So the summary of this article is essentially there has been an update on your infotainment screen on Jeeps that when you come to a stop sign, it starts telling you about the great warranties from Mopar, and you have to press OK to dismiss it. And then the next time you come to a stop sign, boop, pops back up again. Allegedly, this was an accident. I don't think it's an accident. So I can't wait to get ads for Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks in your car as you're passing by them very conveniently in your Stellantis product.
I mean, it's kind of like Waze does that, but you don't have to clear it. It, like, once it senses you're moving again, it just goes away.
Hey, oh, hate it. Hate it.
I think one customer who first outed this issue on the internet talked to Jeep, and they said that it was a contracted part of his Sirius XM subscription. Oh. So it's like, you opted in for this. Sorry.
Oh, it's somewhere in the terms and conditions.
Right. Kind of like where they can track you and sell your data, your driving data. It was in, you signed that.
You said okay.
It was in the 17th paragraph on page 22.
Every day that goes by, Doug, my Volvo is getting better. More miles, more better. It's no ads.
Somebody has to actually call you to try to reach you about an extended warranty.
And then I just ignore it. Ain't talking on the phone. Doug, prop of the week. Let's feel happy.
Submission from Larry. This article is hotcars.com, although it's pretty much everywhere. Gentlemen, put 750,000 miles on his Corvette C5. Whoa. Mark Blackwell did this. He owned it for 18 years, bought it new, and then donated it to the Corvette Museum. So you would have to average 100 miles a day every day for 18 years.
Oh my gosh. Does it tell you, like, I'm just reading through there. Does it tell you how he did this? Did he just like drive all over the place all the time?
He said he used it as a mobile office. So he lived in Jacksonville, and he was required to travel to Georgia and South Florida daily. Rather than opting for something sensible or fuel efficient to cover the distance, Blackwell elected to use a C5 as his mobile office. Wait, they are fuel efficient.
Yeah.
It's like 30 miles to the gallon on the highway. Come on.
They're fantastic on the highway.
Oh, so this is hilarious. The opening to this article... it was written by Gray Van Dyke, but I feel like the first paragraph was written by AI.
Oh, my. No.
Sports cars, especially in the case of American models like the Chevrolet Corvette, are usually known more for their performance than they are for their reliability. With highly stressed engines, sensitive handling, and the most precise of manufacturing tolerances, except in the, interior panels.
I can store so many tubes of toothpaste around that bad boy. Oh, my gosh.
They're intended to provide a thrilling drive, not to last hundreds of thousands of miles.
That's so false.
Well, it's so
what
false,
about
too.
The LS is stressed.
But they say especially American models like the Corvette are known more for performance than reliability. No, they're not. American models are known for their reliability in contrast to Italian and German sports cars. Come on. Well, we're wrong more often than he is, so I guess I can't hate on it too much. Anyway, Mark Blackwell, 773,000 miles, and then he gave it to the Corvette Museum. That guy is the anti-Corvette curmudgeon. In fact, that's probably more miles cumulatively than all the other red Corvettes that were produced on the day that his were produced.
Oh, incredible. Mad respect.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.